Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, hey. Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. Let me turn my mic up a little bit there. It's kind of low. 12 years ago this November, I will have started doing this show because I was in search of information. I was 330 pounds. I had developed a dysrhythmia in my heart. I was on, I think, 11 medications at that time. And I hadn't even turned, I was just about to turn 40. And I knew that there were answers out there, but I couldn't get them because as a regular person, I had to get all my information through the media. I couldn't reach out to a doctor and say, hey, I read your study. And if I'm just a guy, they're not taking my call. But I thought if I'm a host of a podcast, a radio show, and actually I started out as a radio show on Clear Channel, they'll take my calls, they'll answer my questions. So the reality is that this show has had its origins in me just being a selfish a-hole. And it's evolved over the years. And as someone who's looking to learn, I'm a student. I don't dig my heels in and protect anything. I'm like Agent Mulder. I'm looking for the truth. And sometimes the truth today and the truth tomorrow are very, very different. So you either have to turn this journey into a dogmatic process where you refuse to let go of what you thought for what you just learned. Or you continue down the road as a student, saying, I've got nothing to defend here. I'm in search of the truth. And sometimes you got to remind yourself of that. When you start to hear yourself talking, when you're reading a post and you start to hear yourself talking in your head, disagreeing with everything the person is saying, and getting ready to write back, you know, some witty, cutting reply, realize you just stopped being a student at that moment. You can disagree. But you still listen to the professor. You hear the whole discussion. And then you can say, you know, I'm going to style my own thoughts on this. So in order to remain a student, one of the things you have to do is you have to be willing to think of things in a different way. Today's show is actually that way for me. Type 2 diabetes is a disease that touches probably everybody in this country. Either you have a spouse or a loved one who has it, or you have it. Estimates from the CDC say something like 50% of the country will have type 2 diabetes by 2020, I think it was. Everybody is scrambling to figure out what the hell is going on, because every time we learn something, we find out it wasn't right. Today's guest is Evelyn Koser. How you doing, Evelyn?
Hi, how are you?
Great. And so you and I really haven't had a whole lot of contact on Facebook until a post that I made about, you know, carbohydrate being the problem with diabetes.
Right.
And I went to your blog and I started reading and I thought, my God, these are legitimate ideas here. These are other ways of looking at things. And I thought, I've got to have you on the show because I have to hear more. I think we're all searching for the one thing. What's the one thing I can do? Unfortunately, that's a human trait, and it's always more complex. But if we were going to deconstruct type 2 diabetes and try to go, okay, this is the thing here. It's more likely causative. It's not necessarily corollary, and it seems to be experienced in all cases. If we wanted to go down that path, where would we start?
Type 2 diabetes starts in the fat cells. Definitely, I think that there's overwhelming evidence of that, and it also explains why some people who develop type 2 diabetes are not, you know, visually overweight or, you know, necessarily obese. So what seems to happen is that we all have our kind of genetic or developmental amount of fat cells and an ability to store excess energy as fat. We all need to store a certain amount of it as fat. It's what keeps us alive. It's what allows us to have survived as a species and all of this fun stuff. But at some point, we exceed our kind of personal threshold for how much fat we can store healthfully, the fat cells get too big. They get, quote unquote, sick. They start secreting all sorts of hormones, release fatty acids. Macrophages are recruited and infiltrate the fat tissue. And it's kind of a downward spiral from there. And this has been in the scientific literature for, you know, at least a decade, probably going on 2 decades now. And usually if you look, there's terms like adiposopathy, you know, sick fat. So, you know, that's really where it starts. Is in the fat cells.
Okay. So let's branch out from there, right? So there are so many camps now that claim to understand diabetes so well that they know the one thing that needs to be changed to reverse. Because obviously, we're not looking to manage type 2 diabetes, which is the way it's treated today by modern medicine. We really want to reverse it. That has to be the goal. And
yes,
there's a camp out there that will say to you, so I'm playing devil's advocate, the fat is the resultant of these high insulin levels telling the body to store fat. It's not the cause. What would you say to them?
I'd say they have it backwards because, first of all, not all obese people have elevated insulin levels. So that's one key right there. Second of all, there have been a number of studies with insulin suppressive drugs, and they were not very effective in allowing people to lose weight. Really, if you look at, you know, the whole Occam's razor thing, if you look at, and we'll just use the United States, even self-reported intake has increased by, you know, somewhere from 300 to 500 calories, 600 calories a day, since 1970. And that's enough to explain the obesity epidemic right there. You don't need anything else.
Yeah, you don't need the chemistry of hormones.
Yeah,
you don't need
anything else. And the, you know, insulin cannot magically store fat away. It can't put nutrients into your fat cells and deprive your body of energy. It doesn't happen that way.
Interesting. So what you're saying is if you don't put the extra food in, insulin doesn't have any magic that's just still going to populate.
Exactly,
with the fat.
Right. There's no insulin fairy that comes along and does, you know, it does all of the things that are being claimed the current thing is that, you know, insulin's causing, you know, all of the nutrition to be swept out of our bloodstreams into our fat cells. And this is causing the rest of our bodies to starve that's what causes us to overeat. But that's just not borne out by the literature. You don't see it in thousands of studies. They weren't necessarily studying that. They were just giving people a meal and measuring insulin and glucose and fatty acid levels and all that stuff. And it's obvious that, you know, after a meal, you have a flood of nutrition in your bloodstream. It doesn't get swept out and to cause hunger.
And unless you're a European and you're walking home from the restaurant, because we know that being ambulatory and being upright can actually help you rid yourself of that postprandial glucose in a really healthy way, better than metformin, actually. This is intriguing because of its simplicity to me, okay? And the reason I say that is everybody is looking for the magic molecule. They're looking for the hormonal milieu. They're looking for the pathway. They're looking for, you know, leptin's role, insulin's role, cortisol's role. We're looking at all this stuff. But from the 30,000-foot view, what we realize is that if people didn't eat more than required for their daily energy output, they wouldn't be storing fat. Now, the problem with that is we went from calories in, calories out, which was a simple thing, to these hormones like Kekwic and Pawan, one of the earliest isocaloric, single macronutrient type diets. 80% had to come from either fat, protein or carbohydrates, and the only group that gained fat was the group that that ate carbohydrates. So with if we say, okay, you're right, Ev. You're right, Evelyn. You got this. This is simple. This is, does macronutrient ratio and food selection play any role in turning on fat, the fat genesis process?
Not really. I mean, I think it has more to do with satiety and what you know fills you up, et cetera, what foods you are more likely to overeat. I mean, I mean, it's really not rocket science. If you look at what foods, you know, people binge on, what foods people go to restaurants and eat, these are all fat plus carbohydrate bombs. Okay. And I mean, I recently tweeted out something from the Olive Garden. Okay. You think Olive Garden, right? Pasta, breadsticks, blah, blah, blah. More than 50% of the items on that menu are more than 50% fat.
Yeah.
So we have this kind of an enormous amount of calories. And we don't process our normal homeostasis. So I think, you know, one of the things that you were saying that I was kind of ringing bell in my head, I wrote a post recently called Productive Whining, W-H-Y-N-I-N-G, because ever since I kind of found the online internet, you know, the low carb paleo, I call it the ancestral health community because it's just, you know, there's tentacles everywhere that are intertwined. It seems like people are trying to micromanage their diets and everything to manipulate hormones and something until, you know, some magical switch is going to click and all of a sudden our weight is going to normalize. And as someone who was also somewhere around 300 pounds at one point in my life, I'm just going to tell people it does not work that way. You are going to have to do something to eat less, okay, and often a lot less. And that doesn't necessarily mean less volume of food. But it means less calories, right? It has to be. And that is the, you know, we have a lot more control over what we put into our mouths than we're given. And it's, I've been starting using the term emotional correctness lately because it's not emotionally correct to, you know, to say that somebody overeats. Right. Because then, gluttony sloth. You're
right.
Saying they're greedy, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's all the moral implications. It's like, no, you're just eating too much. I was eating too much. You, Carl, were eating too much back when Americans in general are eating too much. And we need to eat less. And this is really the problem, you know, with a lot of the chronic disease. I'm well known as a vocal and outspoken critic of and debunker of Gary Taubes and all of the low carb ideas, but I lost a lot of weight on a low carb diet, so
right.
I would be the last person to say, you know, that that's not a good way to go about it. The evidence is pretty clear when you look at, you know, that you have the Twinkie diet guy, you have the potato diet guy, you have all of these people, losing weight is the key. Losing that weight, losing enough of that weight. Any diet that you are eating in a hypocaloric state is going to improve all of your health markers. It may improve them differently at a different rate, depending upon how quickly you lose weight. But all of these diet comparison, diet war studies, I call them, they all show the same thing, adherence and weight loss. When you have that, everything improves, and then you got to figure out, you know, how do I eat for the rest of my life that's going to be, you know, livable and yet, you know, allow my body to remain at a healthy weight? Because there, you know, I can totally relate to so many of these communities, body positivity and all of this stuff, but if you you need to get your body to a healthy weight. And this is something that I struggle with to this day, and I'm going to probably struggle with for the rest of my life. You know, balancing, trying to keep my weight down and still enjoy myself. You know, that's what we all struggle with. I think a lot of us anyway.
I want to bring this back up a little bit later. So Ron Penna, a friend of mine, one of the founders of Quest Nutrition, said something to me a long time ago that stuck with me when we talk about diet. He said it's not important what you start eating in a new diet. It's important what you stop eating. In other words, what you remove from the diet has a bigger impact than what you add to it. And this is true if you think about it from a weight loss standpoint. Just recently they had that study. I actually sent the copy of it to Adele Moussa, and we communicated about it back and forth. And it just made like the New York Times or something like that. You know, you can lose just as much weight on the low-fat diet as you can on the low-carbohydrate diet. No kidding. Because they were hypocaloric diets. You were eating less. And so, and the problem with this whole thing is this. I am an ancestral health, an ancestral diet observer.
Mm-hmm.
But when I talk about ancestral diet, see, our diet was phasic because we had geography, we had climate, we had opportunity. You know, some areas of the world had this. They didn't have it in other areas. So you had the opportunity, you had unique surroundings and geography. So if you really want to eat like your ancestors, you probably should do a vegan diet for 2 weeks, because maybe that was a period of time where you were too lazy to catch an animal and eat it. You know, and then maybe you should do a keto diet for 2 weeks. There's a doctor out in California who says fast for, I forget if it's 3 or 4 days once a year to suppress any potential for cancer, to take a negative effect on your body and blah, blah, blah. So what I'm starting to understand is that the problem that we have today is diets have become dogma. And I was just texting with Dr. John Parker this morning about this. You know, we were talking about this, about how vegans zealotly protect their vegan diet. And sure, they see weight loss because they stop eating all the crap they were eating before, and they limit their intake entirely, regardless of what the primary food source is. And I said to him, he said, you know, I can't believe vegans are so, they get so agitated and triggered. I said, it's like me telling you that your God isn't really God. What? And I said, that's what started all the major wars in the world. Every war can be followed back to some my religion is stronger than your religion issue. And so if we are ever going to solve anything from a nutritional standpoint, we have to stop this my diet against your diet thing. And we have to start.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, we have to start to recognize the common grounds. But you can't recognize the common ground when you're that person that's reading someone's post and you're already thinking about what you're going to put back there because you're not even paying attention. And that's like a religion.
Yeah, I think also, you know, you have a lot of people like myself. I struggled with my weight. I developed an eating disorder when I was in my late teens, which had me go from being a lean, athletic woman to, you know, struggling with obesity by age 19, and pretty much, you know, up and down. I was not, you know, morbidly obese my whole life, you know, you hit on something. I did Atkins for the first time in 1997, and it was the first time. I think it was like, wow, I can lose weight without like tracking anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it got rid of I was pretty much over my eating disorder by then, but it pretty much got rid of those last vestiges. But it introduced new things because, at that time, Atkins, basically his thing was that you were peeing out a lot of calories in terms of ketones. And we know that that's not true.
Right.
But, you know, when I went off that diet, because it just wasn't sustainable for me, I regained weight like crazy. And a lot of people do that. And I became truly morbidly obese. But, you know, I think a lot of people, they find this diet after years or decades. And maybe some people, you know, a lot of people have been obese their whole life, right? Through childhood, which was not my experience. But you hit on something that works. And all of a sudden, it's like, why has everybody been keeping this secret from me?
And why? You know? And it's my duty to. It's my duty
and
to tell people
about
it. It's
my duty to go out to the world and tell everybody that my diet is the best diet. And you know, I mean, I lost, I mean, I would say close to 100 pounds. I don't know what my exact highest weight was in 2007, so I can't tell you. But in 2009, I had plateaued out and I still had weight to lose. And so that's when I went looking on the internet and I ended up, you know, in low carb forums and people were like, why are you here if you don't want to do this or if you eat this? Or because I, you know, had kind of my own way that the way I could stick to it was I don't do low, didn't do low carb on my vacations or on, you know, date
night. But see, that's the answer to the whole problem, right?
Yeah.
If I went to the most brilliant scientists in the world and you could pick them and I said, what's the secret to diet success? You know what they say? The diet that the person's willing to stick to.
Exactly.
So, I don't know if you have a friend, but that, on Facebook, I have a friend named Kate Ann. And Kate Ann, all she eats is sushi and carbs and potatoes.
Yep.
And she stays in shape. And that's what I want to talk about when I come back, actually, because you said something before. I said, I want to bring that back up again. You know, Kate Ann is a fan of intermittent fasting. So she is controlling her total intake of calories for the day. Kate Ann goes to the gym and trains really hard. So she is, in fact, working out. I want to talk about muscle. So you told me that fat is what causes type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance. I want to talk about fat's antithesis, and that is muscle, when we come back. Stay tuned. Coupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
If you've followed my transformation on Facebook, you've been wondering what I've done to create such dramatic results. One of the things is I've started every day with the Ketogenics Prime and then trained, fasted, and remained fasted till my first meal at 2 o'clock. Ketogenics Prime gives me all the energy I need while shutting down hunger. And since the ketones are bound to a quad mineral blend, I'm getting all the magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium I need to keep my minerals in balance. Try Ketogenics Prime yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketogenics banner ad today and save 25% off your first purchase. Ketogenics Prime. I couldn't have done it without.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenadrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenadrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenadrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Few products can boast being considered the food of the gods by the Aztecs, but the ingredients in Bio Superfood have been. Some algae are the most efficient forms of nutrients, proteins, minerals, enzymes, fatty acids, antioxidants, and much more.
Bio Superfood is something you have to experience for yourself. That's why, for a limited time, buy any Bio Superfood products and save 15% off your first order. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad to read the research and learn why Bio Superfood is the best supplement in the world you're not already taking.
In today's world, what would you give to have that ultimate edge, to always function at the highest possible level? That's exactly what the Da Vinci from Ultra Human gives you. Just one tablet a day increases focus, lowers anxiety, enhances social fluency, and improves your mood and drive. It's 8 hours strong with no crash. A sharp mind is priceless, and the Da Vinci even comes with a money-back guarantee. Find out more at theultrahuman.net. Make your brain 25 again with the Da Vinci from theultrahuman.net. Use discount code SHR10 for 10% off and free shipping.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. We're talking to Evelyn Koser. Oh, you know, I talk slow when we come back.
It's because, right.
You know, I'm trying to be like the suave DJ coming off the song. Hey, welcome back.
Yeah, hey.
Later in the show, we're going to be talking to a Dr. Kaufman, Keith Kaufman, who just published an amazing study on the type of mindfulness that it will improve your performance if you're an athlete. We're all athletes in this audience, one type or another. So that's going to be a really great discussion. So stick around for the top of the hour. And that leads me to this next statement, if you will. I think diet matters less and less the harder you train or the more active you are. I have this feeling that, and this comes from, did you ever read Dr. Melinda Watvey's book of Doves, Diplomats, and Diabetes?
No, I have not.
You'd like it. It's a Darwinian / evolutionary look at the mechanisms that lead to diabetes and the mechanisms that are protective from an evolutionary perspective, as we evolved for millions of years. And so I have this strange feeling that you could eat worse. And I'm not suggesting people eat crap food and do this as an example, but you could probably get away with a diet that's not exactly the right diet for you if you are training regularly and intensely. Because I have this feeling that muscle, not only just the activity itself, but I've been saying on this show since the day I started doing the show, muscle is metabolic currency. It will pay off all your bad decision debts. And in fact, for years, I trained and lived and I was great. And then I went through a divorce and I started partying and, you know, drinking, staying out late and doing all this other stuff. And little at a time, my health started to erode. It didn't go immediately. And it's almost like I started to draw down on the equity that I had invested in my body. And then I had to get back on the track again and straighten things out because I was like, oh, my God, I'm developing issues now. So what about physical activity? What about intense, engaging physical activity? What role does this have and the muscle that it creates in this discussion?
Well, I think there's a couple things, but you know, for most of us, I mean, especially women, when you look at how much muscle you can realistically, you know, number of pounds create, and I did an analysis once for pretty extreme body composition, you know, 15% body fat, which is quite low,
right,
to 30% body fat. And, you know, that's a pretty big extreme. It comes out to like 50 calories a day. So metabolically, in terms of, I see a lot of stuff on the internet about, you know, oh yeah, you want to do resistance training because this is going to create more muscle and that's metabolically active and you're going to burn more calories. Realistically, it's not, you know, going to be the make or break. You're not going to be able to go out.
But what if it's not the direct caloric expenditure?
Right. If you are very physically active or you're just regularly physically active, the effects on your muscles or on your body in general in terms of fat accumulation, because getting back to kind of the reason I came on about the diabetes, the diabetes kind of results from your fat gets too full. The fatty acids that are supposed to be stored in your fat cells are, there's excess delivery of those to the muscle cells and all of the cells of the body. And we lump them all together and call that ectopic cells. So the fat is delivered. The other cells really can't refuse delivery of the fatty acids. So they store them. And then, we exceed the local storage. Right. We had a small wallet. Mm-hmm. We see the local storage and then it interferes with the function of those cells. So if you are physically active and, even if you are eating a diet that may otherwise, build into your genetic predispositions, et cetera, you're burning off those fatty acids. You're burning off the local stores, the glycogen, the fatty acids, on a daily basis or a regular basis. So you're kind of draining the wallet and then refilling it from the bank, instead of having everything be full all the time and more and more and more keeps getting stuffed in. So I think that there's something, and I think that this is why intermittent fasting seems to work for a lot of people as well, aside from the caloric difference, because, there are a number of studies where intermittent fasting's been done that show similar average total calories, but improved metabolic function when there's some fasting. I think, again, it's a matter of, giving the cells a chance to kind of drain the local stores a little bit so that everything's not always constantly topped off. Because that's really what diabetes ends up being is everything just is just constantly in excess, and that our cells are just constantly bathed in excess of nutrients, and there's just they don't know what to do with it.
Right.
And
do you think so? We know I know women who probably can fit in a size 3 dress or 2 dress, which back in the 50s was a 0.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Vanity sizing. Elisa taught me about vanity sizing the other day. It's shocking. But anyway, I know women that when you look at them, they look great, but they are clearly pre-diabetic. What about muscle from a standpoint of being an organ that sends signaling molecules to the rest of the body of its presence, that there may be a ratio of lean mass to fat mass that creates this threshold that's unique to each person?
I think there might be something to that in terms of weight regulation and things of that nature. I really don't know with diabetes if that really would come into play because, again, a lot of thin people who don't develop diabetes, are not necessarily very muscular. And so it's not necessarily that they have, this muscle
that's using it up.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you look at, kind of endurance athletes and these kinds of people who are highly active and so forth, they tend to be, very wiry. They don't have a lot of muscle to them. They're just, using – they have a very high turnover of energy. So I don't know so much. I really think that for most people, the focus is better spent on the fat tissue. And then activity and weight training and all of that, I forgot what you were saying. You called it currency. It allows you to be able to eat a little bit more, to be able to enjoy a little bit of this, and it really helps regulate appetite.
Well, and Dr. Watvey's book, he shows science and evolutionary science side by side, and shows that after strenuous training, what your body does with that meal is very, very different. Just like the flip side, after a big meal,
right,
sit down and lay around for a while if you want to, watch what happens to postprandial blood sugar levels. So there is there's this intrinsic and extrinsic effect.
You used to go out for a walk, right?
Yeah. I did a blog post in 2010 that said the secret may not be the Mediterranean diet, but the fact that the French walk to and from the restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, after Thanksgiving, we'd stuff our faces and then we'd go out for a walk.
Right, right.
You know, I don't know if people still do that anymore.
No, they don't. But my grandparents did it, and my parents did it. So anyway, all right, look, I want to take a break. When we come back, I've got more questions. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
Alaskans agree that sockeye offers the truest salmon taste. Over decades of fishing Alaskan waters, Vital Choice has rare access to the very finest of these fish. Vital Choice sockeye comes from smaller harvest regions with fewer boats and faster processing, so our sockeye is flash frozen within hours of harvest to capture its fresh caught quality. Rich in flavor, omega-3s, and vitamin D, our most popular salmon also abounds in astaxanthin, the potent antioxidant that provides its vibrant red hue. Save 15% off. Go to Superhuman Radio and click the Vital Choice banner ad today.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
There is no other olive oil like Papa Vint's extra virgin olive. Not just because of the care and quality that goes into producing it, but also because the unique Nocciolata di Belice olive that grows in Sicily is like no other olive in the world. Its spicy yet buttery flavor improves any food it comes in contact with. Higher in antioxidants, Papa Vint's is raw, unfiltered, and cloudy, and comes from a single orchard owned and operated by the same family for over 100 years. It's the only olive oil Elisa and I will ever use. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Papa Vint's banner ad and use code SHR45 and get two bottles of Papa Vint's for $45 while supplies last.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. KetoKana is the first ketone powder that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the blood. Stream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Kana and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Kana banner ad today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at liveonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's liveonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Quest Keto is making the keto ketogenic lifestyle more delicious and more convenient than ever. The high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb keto diet has earned a reputation for being complicated. Quest Keto has changed all of that by offering sweet and savory snacks and an entire line of ready-to-go ketogenic meals. They've taken the guesswork out of it for you. From keto cinnamon rolls, pizza, crackers, and more, you can enjoy it all and experience the benefits of this nutritious approach anytime, anywhere. Thanks to Quest Keto. Go to QuestKeto.com to order your meals today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back. We're talking with Evelyn Koser. Evelyn, I should have did this at the beginning of the show, but I got into my little monologue. You are a researcher, but also an adjunct professor at several universities, correct?
Yes.
And your research is a result of your own life experiences in trying to find answers, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, that's really I have a background in research, but I kind of got woken up when I was looking into trying to figure out in like 2009, whether eating a low carb diet for the rest of my life was indeed a healthy way to live, because it's not a very popular way to live. So that's how I kind of got into that. And I had experienced some kind of weird feelings of, kind of skiddly feeling, like the rapid heart palpitations and stuff years prior when I had done Atkins before. And that's what actually caused me to go off of it. I would eat a few carbs and I'd feel better.
Well, one of the statements I want to make, and then I want you to opine, is I eat everything. So, I eat animal protein. I eat vegetables. I eat fruit. I eat dairy. I don't think there is anything that I don't eat. Now, I don't eat any processed foods. I buy nothing with a pre-made that's with a label that has a bunch of ingredients on it. And when I do go to restaurants, I tend to go for simple meals, a piece of salmon and some vegetables or something like that. But, I'll have a croissant if I feel like having a croissant. I know it's probably not the greatest choice from a nutritive standpoint, but what the hell? And so I eat everything. My blood sugar is magnificent. I've posted it on Facebook at regularly 59 when I wake up, and I go to the gym and I train like that. Lately, I've been using some carbohydrates pre-workout because I'm experimenting with stuff. But the bottom line is this, I think that these very rigid diets, high fat or vegan, I think a lot of these very rigid diets have their place if you want to use them therapeutically. For instance, if you're suffering from a brain tumor and you realize that the brain tumor is more important than necessarily the lack of appropriate nutrients and minerals and vitamins in this diet, like a keto diet. But the reality is that any extreme diet is going to either cause an overabundance of some things or an underabundance of other things that is not necessarily good. So the real human diet is to eat of everything except the stuff that somebody made and put it in a box and loaded it with crap. What do you think of that?
I agree with you. I mean, I think we have to separate strategies from the overall average, right? So for me personally, what works really, really well, and this is very odd because coming from an eating disordered background, there's a lot of people out there that are always like, oh, don't ever restrict this. Don't ever restrict that. It's going to cause this problem, going to cause it. And I was kind of hamstrung by this for a while. And I have found that what works for me is I keep my home, I hate the word, but clean,
Right.
My home food environment, we don't bring crap in the house. And I eat what works for me right now, and it worked better than very low carb, is I eat a very, very low fat diet. Very plant heavy. Mm-hmm. But then when I eat outside the house or, special occasions or, a meal here or there, I add the other things in. And it's not that I think that dairy is bad, but when I took dairy out of my diet, it was the easiest way to get rid of extra calories because cheese is very calorific.
Right. Right.
But by the same token, I don't eat nuts. And nuts are pretty universally accepted to be very healthy.
Yeah,
food.
But you know what? I had this discussion with Dominic D'Agostino on the show a long time ago. I love nuts, but they don't love me. They seem to linger in my gut for a really, really, really long time. I have to eat nuts very sparingly. And if I eat nuts, I just eat nuts. I don't then go and have something else where my stomach is going to go, okay, what do we digest first and what digests fastest on it? I can't do that, but I don't do that.
I mean, I think we, for some people, it works better to, not eat things. For me, it works best to just kind of have like a baseline diet. I call it like my default diet or my, my habitual diet is, mm-hmm. is the word I've been using lately. And then, you know, when I go out or when I do this or when I do that, I deviate from it. And, you know, we have my husband's quite different from me. He's much more, he needs meat more than I do. I eat meat. I'm like you. I eat everything.
Yeah.
At different times, you know, it's just when it's appropriate, and it's easiest for me because I don't like tracking. I don't, you know, everybody's like, oh, she's all about calories in, calories out, and, you know, counting calories. I haven't counted calories in 8 years. I don't like to count calories. I hate it, as a matter of fact. And so it's much easier for me to know approximate portions, but when I say I don't count calories, it doesn't mean I'm not aware of them.
Right. Right.
So if I know I'm going to go out and we're going to be out and we're going to go to a restaurant for dinner, like when we were traveling last summer, you know, we were in certain places, like I want to go to this restaurant. You know, I wanted to.
Yeah. When you order something, you go, how many?
Michael Simon restaurant, yeah, right? Because Michael Simon from Clean
Bit. Right.
So we went to, I think it was called B Spot or something like that. And I had some, kielbasa with French fries on top, and that was all I ate that day.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't care how many calories were in there. There were probably, you know, 1800 calories in that meal, but that was my whole day.
Right.
You know, so there are ways to kind of manage all of this and navigate that system where you can still kind of enjoy yourself.
I think intermittent fasting is so valuable. If people make a commitment that I'm not going to eat, I'm going to eat my last meal at 6 o'clock and I'm not going to eat again until noon the next day. And they get into that rhythm of it. Adele Moussa did a great blog post a couple years ago that showed, you know, the real value of intermittent fasting is you just end up eating less.
Yes.
You know, that's all there is to it.
And it's another way of cutting out snacking, because snacking is really, it's the mindless eating where, I mean, you know, I was at the register at Trader Joe's the other day, and there was this little packet of dark chocolate covered almonds, right? You know, health halo for some people. And I turned it over, and this little tiny packet, I think it was 2.5 ounces. It was very small. It fit in the palm of my hand, like literally the palm of my hand. And it was 410 calories. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, you know, this is the kind of thing, like if you're grabbing a slice of cheese, a handful of nuts, the olives, and these things, it adds up. So intermittent fasting works really great for a lot of people. And when I do, like, when I do intermittent fasting, I just don't call it that. I just say, you know, I'm going out to eat tonight. So, I mean, you know, the women's magazines, when I was growing up and whatever, the women's magazines always say, you have a party. Okay, this is how you navigate this. You eat a big breakfast because you don't want to be hungry later. And then you have a snack, you have a meal before you go to the party, so then you won't want to eat the chips. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, how does this really end up? You eat all this food, and then you go, and you like, and you feel deprived and whatever, and then you don't eat any of the food at the thing, and then on the way home, you're going through the drive-thru.
Right.
So instead, you say, hey, I'm going to a party tonight, so I'm just not going to eat all day. And maybe you eat celery sticks or carrots, or I love the baby carrots in the bag. They're great. You know, there's not a lot of calories in there. There's just enough calories. So you eat melon or, you know, whatever, something very voluminous, not very many calories. And you just nosh on that all day, and then you go to your party and you have whatever the heck you want.
Yeah.
You know?
One more thing I want to talk about real quick. We have like 10 minutes left in the interview.
Okay, sure.
So once someone has developed type 2 diabetes, they're insulin resistant. Pancreas is working very, very hard to keep up. Obviously, if they stay on that path, they'll end up on insulin. Type 2 diabetics do get prescribed insulin, by the way. You and I were on a thread the other day where somebody said,
yeah.
But anyway, that's neither.
They should be, and they should be.
Yeah. And so, doesn't it make perfect sense in that instance, like my example about the therapeutic diet for brain tumor being more important than the nutrient deficiencies that you're at risk of? Doesn't that patient really need to go low carb, because part of managing and getting themselves corrected is to stop the carbohydrate load and reduce. And now you got to do it sensibly, because you don't want them to become hypoglycemic. But isn't that appropriate for a lowering of carbohydrate intake?
You know, low carb is one way to go. But I really believe, and this is the Ron Taylor, who's in the UK at a Newcastle University. There's something called the Newcastle diet, and anybody can Google that. And this was about 4 or 5 years ago now, I think. Basically a crash diet to cure diabetes. And this came out of observations that people who had gastric bypass surgery had, you know, normalized their diabetes, you know, to normal glucose levels within days of the surgery. And this has been known for 15, 20 years. So this flies in the face with the idea that when once you have diabetes, it's set in and it's progressive and it's going to just keep going, right? That your beta cells are dead. It's not the same as type 1.
Right.
So what in the earlier publications, Taylor said, you know, we thought, well, maybe it's the large calorie deficit, because right after the surgery, you have to, you know, basically you're eating a protein sparing modified fast, et cetera. So they tried this very low calorie diet, 600 to 800 calories a day for 8 weeks. And they reversed the diabetes in the remarkable number of patients by 8 weeks. And published a follow-up a few years later. And basically within the first week is when the liver fat goes out and the liver starts functioning properly and fasting blood glucose starts to normalize. And then the insulin secretion from the pancreas improves over the course of the 8 weeks. And this is correlated with lowering of the fat content of the pancreas. And after 8 weeks, you have normal blood glucose, you know, and it's all metabolism. I think that there's a problem with focusing on just the glucose levels, because that's the last thing that goes bad. The fatty mm-hmm. acids go wonky first. Mm-hmm. And second of all, I mean, so, you know, I think I put this on the thread that prompted you having me on this podcast, is if I was diagnosed with diabetes tomorrow, the first thing I would do is go on a whatever diet I could go on that I could do for 6 to 8 weeks with a significant calorie deficit and lose a lot of weight rapidly. Now, for whatever reason, the medical establishment is, you know, reticent to suggest a crash diet. Because, and then everybody says, well, that's not sustainable. That's not the point. It's not supposed to be sustainable. It's to reverse that. And once you reverse that, then you figure out how to keep that weight off. Because basically, when you get diagnosed, you have exceeded your fat threshold. And so if you can reverse that, then it buys you some time too, because it seems to take some time. Because even in Taylor's original study, I think that 6 months later, patients had put back on some of the weight they lost, and they were still free of their diabetes, but they were eating carbohydrates. This is the thing. This is what gets me about the low carb approach, because it's a trap. You lose a lot of weight, and that's what brings things down. But then if you are not eating carbohydrates, and Hemsworth, there's a researcher, Hemsworth, that back in 1937, I want to say, there's a classic paper. You lose your glucose-stimulated insulin secretion, GSIS.
And you did say this in that thread. Basically, what happens is you abstain from carbohydrates. Your condition changes acutely, but it's not cured, because if it was cured, you'd be able to eat carbohydrates again. And Adele Moussa said the same exact thing. He said the same mm-hmm. exact thing. So there are a lot of people out there who understand this and get it. In fact,
and I don't know why it hasn't made its way.
Well, I'm going to tell you why. Because what I said at the beginning of the show was meant for everybody who listens to the show. And I think researchers are the worst ones when it comes to this, because they have literally invested a lifetime into something sometimes. And to go, oh, wow, like I just wasted a decade of research and money and everything else, because now I just found out that, oh, it turns out to be, yeah, calories in, calories out.
And, you know, when you're eating a caloric diet, as you said before, insulin doesn't have some magic ability to take calories that don't exist and put them in fat cells.
Right, exactly.
And so we've just invested, I mean, everybody out there has invested so much time and effort into trying to isolate the one thing, GLP-1 and all these, metformin and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait a minute. So in other words, if we just get people to eat less, if that becomes the focus, then we would be working on things that get people to eat less instead of saying, no, eat as much as you want. And we have a pill for that.
Yeah.
It's really sad because, you know, while everybody's arguing about climate change, and I don't know whether climate change happens or doesn't happen. I got no dog in that fight. Everybody's worried about terrorism. Everybody's worried about, well, North Korea probably is a legitimate problem right now. But, I mean, this country is going to collapse under the weight of sick people well before any of these other things get us, so to speak. And if we don't start to look at the fact that 50% of the population is going to be sick and unproductive, but worse than that, on the shoulders of the 50% of the population that isn't sick and unproductive, we would realize very, very quickly that the biggest thing that threatens our sovereignty and our autonomy as a country is the fact that we are ignoring the 5,000-pound elephant in the room, which is people just eat way too friggin' much, period.
And we're dancing around it because we are telling people it's not your fault.
Yes.
It's your metabolism is this and that and whatever. And it's the patriarchy. You know, for women, it's a big thing. Like, you know, I'm going to show it to the man. I'm going to be as fat as I want to be and show. And I want to just like shake these people and say, listen, because I'm going to turn 54 this year. And it's like, I finally figured some of this stuff out. And a lot of people don't figure this out for a long time. And I'm working with, I have a bad ankle and a bad hip and, you know, and it's like, listen, you got to get control of it and take responsibility. Sit there and look at yourself and say, why am I eating so much? And if you really have, there are hormonal issues, you know, Cushing's disease, things like that, thyroid, you know, get that and be your own best advocate and go push for yourself and push and keep pushing and find another doctor if you don't feel like you're getting proper care on that. If you really have done everything that you feel that you've done. Right. But if you haven't, I mean, I was on Twitter the other day and somebody was saying that, and I asked the person, I said, have you ever just tracked your food to know how much you're eating? No, why would that do me any good? Well, duh.
Because at least you could eliminate your metabolism actually being the problem.
Exactly. And, you know, there, you can go get, it's surprisingly difficult to get your metabolic rate measured. That's something that really bothers.
We have a device called the breathing unit on our webpage. It's about $300 and it's a handheld calorimeter and it's and Ron Penna from Quest took, he and Shannon used it and then they went to the local university and had their $10,000 calorimeter, and it was spot on the same thing. It's called the breathing unit. It's on superhumanradio.net, and you can get it there. It's like $300, and it works, and it hooks up to an iPhone.
Yeah, just figure out how much you burn.
But see, no one will invest in that, but they'll buy all the Xanadrine and Xantrac and all these other stupid supplements. Look, Evelyn, we got to pull it. This has been a fascinating discussion. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Evelyn's website is carbsanity.blogspot.com. Go there. Read some of the stuff she's writing. It's really, really good stuff. Reach out to her. Let her know you heard about her here. We'll be right back with more Supreme Radio. We're going to talk about mindfulness, improving your performance. Legit stuff. We'll be right back.
Alaskans agree that sockeye offers the truest salmon taste. Over decades of fishing Alaskan waters, Vital Choice has rare access to the very finest of these fish. Vital Choice sockeye comes from smaller harvest regions with fewer boats and faster processing. So our sockeye is flash frozen within hours of harvest to capture its fresh caught quality. Rich in flavor, omega-3s, and vitamin D, our most popular salmon also abounds in astaxanthin, the potent antioxidant that provides its vibrant red hue. Save 15% off. Go to Superhuman Radio and click the Vital Choice banner ad today. Few products can boast being considered the food of the gods by the Aztecs, but the ingredients in Bio Superfood have been. Some algae are the most efficient forms of nutrients, proteins, minerals, enzymes, fatty acids, antioxidants, and much more. Bio Superfood is something you have to experience for yourself. That's why, for a limited time, buy any Bio Superfood products and save 15% off your first order. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad to read the research and learn why Bio Superfood is the best supplement in the world you're not already taking.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
If you followed my transformation on Facebook, you've been wondering what I've done to create such dramatic results. One of the things is I've started every day with the Ketogenics Prime and then trained fasted and remained fasted till my first meal at 2 o'clock. Ketogenics Prime gives me all the energy I need while shutting down hunger. And since the ketones are bound to a quad mineral blend, I'm getting all the magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium I need to keep my minerals in balance. Try Ketogenics Prime yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketogenics banner ad today and save 25% off your first purchase. Ketogenics Prime. I couldn't have done it without.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Discover the faster way of getting real results with bodybuildingsupplements.com. Bodybuildingsupplements.com has powerful, proven solutions like patent technology, Crealkaline Supreme, Mass Pro Synthogen, and Adaptogen N.
RVD here. I love Adaptogen N. Give it a try. You'll see.
Buy Adaptogen N at bodybuildingsupplements.com. See remarkable results in 21 days or your money back. Bodybuildingsupplements.com. Since 1993, the trusted source for real results.
Use promo code SUPERHUMAN and get an extra 15% off your Adaptogen N today at bodybuildingsupplements.com.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise With Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. You know, over the almost 12 years that I've been doing this show, we've done shows on mindfulness before. My first interview about this sort of stuff was in 2005 with Marv Fremiman. And we've done shows about mindfulness and not necessarily athletic performance. That one was athletic performance. Mindfulness is something that we all know about. We all believe it. But none of us use it, which really is weird. Like, I think about it myself. I mean, I'm a 17-year student of transcendental meditation. I can't tell you the last time I meditated. Well, it's time to start paying attention to it if you are an athlete, and we're all athletes in this audience. My next guest is Dr. Keith Kaufman. How are you doing, Dr. Kaufman?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
You just published a study about a new mindfulness method that actually has been shown to help both coaches and their athletes perform better. What do you think about what I just said? We all know about mindfulness being so effective, and not even in athletic performance, in life in general, but nobody takes the time to actually do it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And just to sort of clarify, we've been publishing on this for about 10 years now.
Oh,
so,
cool. Yeah.
We're in the process of publishing a pretty big study that we did, but if you go back and look at the literature, we've been doing this for a little while. But I think what you're saying is absolutely true, that this is something, and we kind of broaden it in our literature to talking about just mental training in general, right? That we sort of talk about it as what's called the mental training paradox, where if you ask athletes, if you ask performers, is the mind important to performance, almost everyone agrees.
Yeah.
But if you ask them, well, what do you do to regularly practice? What do you do to train your mind the same way you might train your body or train your technique? And it's like crickets. It's people don't answer. And now what we're doing is trying to move a little bit in a mindful direction, bringing mindfulness into sport and performance. And that's even a further paradigm shift beyond what's already there, which is largely cognitive behavioral techniques. So it's compounding the issue that you're raising in terms of not only getting people to commit to mental training, but then committing to this different way of mental training.
So, yes, because in the past, mindfulness was... I would say, I want to think about how I want to put this. So in the past, all the shows that we've done about mindfulness had more to do with creative visualization. See yourself winning. See yourself. And actually leveraging and or attaching symbolism to these events, connecting with that event through symbolism and emotion, and then being so confident you can facilitate it that it improves your performance. But yours is different.
Yes. Ours is different. Ours really comes from more of the tradition of Jon Kabat-Zinn's work. And I'm not sure if you're familiar.
Oh, yeah. I do another show with a fellow named Ken O'Neill, and he's talked about him often. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he really brought mindfulness in a large way into the mainstream in psychology, and he kind of broke through using it for pain management. And since then, it's really exploded in terms of all the different applications. So we've taken a lot of his theories and ideas and sort of tweaked them and extended them and adapted them and fit them into more of a performance model. So, yeah, what you're describing is more almost like a traditional visualization intervention. And our way of defining mindfulness is a bit different than that.
And see, so I want you to describe what you learned in this research and what evolved as far as this type of mindfulness. Take my audience through it.
Sure. So the way it really started was in being intrigued, like with sports psychology, with performance enhancement. There had been some rumblings that, hey, we've got these existing interventions, these cognitive behavioral techniques, and not really sure that they're as effective as we think they are. You know, there's plenty of research out there, but maybe there's some new directions that we could go in, and that's what really led us to begin considering mindfulness. And when we considered it and began wondering, well, what might the implications be, something that kind of hit us right between the eyes is the connection between mindfulness and what's known as flow. And I'm not sure if flow is a term you're familiar with. It's not specific to sport and exercise. It's actually been used in a lot of different domains to sort of capture this idea of optimal experience. And in sport or in performance, a lot of people relate flow to being in the zone, right? Which is basically a cliche, you know, being in the zone. And what got us excited is, well, if we're saying that being in flow might be like being in the zone, and there might be a link between mindfulness and flow, then we might really have something here. And what we saw as the main connection between mindfulness and flow is that the way you pay attention in mindfulness, the way you regulate your attention, and also the way you regulate your emotions mainly, that those things basically are the same in mindfulness and what predicts getting into a flow state. And that's where our research started is, number one, is there a connection between mindfulness and flow? And number two, if you can train people in a particular style of mindfulness, might they get into flow more frequently?
Okay, so this is really fascinating because the whole flow thing for me started after reading the book Becoming Superman, I think it was called. I had the author on the show. It was probably a couple years ago. And then I started communicating with some other people. And what you just said made me connect some dots in my head. Mm-hmm. And not only what you just said, but what I know about your study. So in your approach to mindfulness, instead of trying to superimpose emotions, emotion-driven feelings into a person, making them connect to an event and seeing themselves achieving it, which basically, when you think about it, is a tug of war between believing you can and believing you can't, mm-hmm. right? What you say is remove all symbolism, detach all of the emotion that this or that, and step into neutral, where neither of these, I can and I can't, even are interacting on you, which actually is brilliant. Because when you look at someone that's in the zone, they really are not noticing anything around them. They actually have disconnected, maybe on a mental level, to the things that the body samples for in milliseconds and nanoseconds that tell them that they are going to or they can't. They just say, I'm not listening to that stuff anymore. I'm here right now. I'm in the now. And they tell you time slows down. Well, sure, time slows it down because time is affected, or your representation of time is affected by all of these landmark events around you. The woman screaming because, you know, I mean, it's all this stuff that feeds into your research says, no, don't think about those things at all. Disconnect from what these things mean to you, right? I mean, am I getting it or did I miss it?
Yeah, I think you're getting it in part. It's in some ways, I sort of joke with people, it's deceptively complicated and deceptively simple.
Simple, right.
Where I think a lot of traditional interventions, and I think what you're speaking to, is almost like a need to manufacture something.
Yes.
You know, the traditional idea of positive thinking is good, negative thinking is bad, I want to see myself being successful.
Yes.
And what's very different about our approach is we say, you know, sports are emotional. There's ups and downs. We have successes and failures, and it's all about learning to ride that wave and to ride that wave without getting wrapped up in your reactions, right? So stuff's happening, and what we talk about a lot is the observing mind.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
Rather than reacting, you're observing. And anytime, at least what we observe, and there's a fair amount of literature to back this up, when you try to manufacture something or when you try to take a negative and turn it into a positive, sometimes you get stuck. Sometimes it backfires on you. It's an ironic process. And so the way we look at it as, you know, it's not easy to learn to be non-reactive. But if you can train that skill, it's so much easier. It's so much more of a straight line between two points to just be able to be okay with what is.
Whatever happens.
Right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that you don't care about winning, and that doesn't mean that you don't care about being successful. It just means that you don't get wrapped up in any single time point or any single thing that happens. You're just kind of in it. And I think that's what you're speaking to with flow. That flow, and this is sort of a misnomer that a lot of I work in private practice, and a lot of clients talk about this. The idea, like you're talking about, disconnection. And flow is actually absolute absorption in what you're doing to the extent that other things fade away. It's actually kind of idyllic concentration. And sometimes we talk about that as like mental efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of clients will come to me and say, well, I want to stop thinking, you know, or I want to disconnect. I want to tune it all out. And flow is sort of the extreme opposite of that, yet it has a lot of the same effects, if that makes sense.
But and it does make sense, and I'll tell you why. Because in order to be completely absorbed in everything and in the moment and in the now, you cannot be interpreting one thing or the other thing as being good or bad,
right.
Or positive or negative. Because if you start to label these things, then they are attracting your attention, and you're not paying attention to the other things that you would be super absorbed in. So it does
exactly.
Make sense. It really does.
Right. So we talk about it as, you know, in sports, but in other performances too, stuff's always happening, and it's so easy for attention to get hijacked by reactions. you know, something good or bad, or we see this all the time in sports, that something happens and we start interpreting it. Oh, well, does this mean I'm going to lose? Does this mean this person's going to beat me? And when that happens, we lose focus on what we're doing and start predicting about what this means for outcome.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I want to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I'd like to start to talk about maybe some practical ways that people can leverage this. And then also, you've got a book coming out. We want to talk about that. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
U.S. Wellness Meats is the leader in home-delivered, high-quality animal protein. Grass-fed beef, lamb, bison, and dairy. Plus, wild-caught seafood, heritage pork, and free-range poultry. Everything delivered right to your door within days of your order. There is no one better to supply you and your family with the highest quality, passion meat product and dairy than U.S. Wellness Meats. Save 15% off when you use the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the U.S. Wellness Meats banner ad today.
In today's world, what would you give to have that ultimate edge, to always function at the highest possible level? That's exactly what the Da Vinci from Ultra Human gives you. Just one tablet a day increases focus, lowers anxiety, enhances social fluency, and improves your mood and drive. It's 8 hours strong with no crash. A sharp mind is priceless, and the Da Vinci even comes with a money-back guarantee. Find out more at theultrahuman.net. Make your brain 25 again with the Da Vinci from theultrahuman.net. Use discount code SHR10 for 10% off and free shipping.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenadrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenadrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenadrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back.
just bust a move. Come on, I feel
like busting loose. We actually have a question I'll try to work in towards the end of the interview from Dr. John Parker. So, Dr. Kaufman, tell my audience, give us some tips, some steps to get ourselves into this this state of mind and utilize this this style of mindfulness.
Yeah, so what we've actually developed is an intervention program, a training program that people can use to develop these mental skills. And we're really excited about it. This is really, I mentioned at the top that we've been researching for about 10 years, and this has been what we've researched, is this program we've developed around the ideas that you and I are discussing. It's called Mindful Sport Performance Enhancement, MSPE. And what it is, it's a 6-session program. Where we start off by doing some traditional sort of fundamental mindfulness practices, which often involve being more still and just sort of getting the hang of the mental piece of it. And then over the course of the sessions, we incorporate more and more movement and make it more and more applied, so that by the end, the folks that we're working with learn to pay a mindful style of attention while they're actually engaged in their sport, or if it's a different kind of performer, whatever their activity might be. So it's really unique in the sense that it really teaches mindfulness in action, mindfulness in motion, and sort of takes someone from those fundamentals through to the application of that.
Do you have any metrics to show or to talk about of people that you've used it with, or maybe even that have been studied in your?
Sure. So we've done a handful of studies now, actually, with multiple levels of competitors. We've worked with youth athletes. All the way up through high school, and we've done a number of college studies as well. We just finished a randomized control trial with a collegiate athletics department and are in the process of editing an article that will hopefully come out very soon describing the results of that. And we're very excited that we'll be partnering with a professional soccer team in the very near future as well in introducing it to their academy. And allowing their academy players to get trained and sort of immersed in this mindfulness culture. So, you know, we've done a number of different studies and have shown and have found much of it other than the RCT, you know, they were open trials, so you have to be mindful of, you know, the conclusions that you draw. But so far we've seen, you know, a lot of promise in terms of the potential for improving flow and also reducing anxiety. In our RCT, we saw some evidence that it can be protective against depression in college student athletes, which is really interesting. And, you know, excited too, we've seen a lot of improvement in mindfulness through the course of the training, which is probably the biggest thing you want to see to make sure that you're trained in the right thing and that it's working.
So the book that's coming out, is it so that I can buy the book and I can go home and I can learn how to do this myself?
Yep. So we wrote it so that athletes, coaches themselves, they don't need to have a sports science background to understand it. They can take themselves through the program, but also sports psychologists or just regular psychologists, generalists, students, teachers, really anybody who has an interest in mindfulness, anyone who has an interest in sport performance, you know, can use this. And the book includes kind of a description of why mindfulness makes sense in sports. And how we sort of came to our theories and our ideas. And then it actually lays out the 6-session program step by step so that folks can take themselves through it, or if they want to lead groups of it, that they can do that with their athletes or performers. So it's meant to be part manual, essentially, where people can go through the training, but also, you know, just sort of describing the applications of mindfulness to sport.
Will you be offering certification programs for clinicians who want to offer this to their patients?
So
maybe not patients, clients, I should have said. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sure. So we're in the process of setting that up. My team it originated as my research team, but we're as the book is being released and as word is getting out about MSPE, we're taking it in lots of applied directions. So we are in the process of setting up essentially a consulting program where we can come in and train people on how to teach this. We could obviously administer the training ourselves. And we would like to develop some kind of certification in the near future where people can get basically MSP certified to do this.
Right. We have a question. It's unrelated to this, but kind of a sidebar from Dr. John Parker. He wants your opinion of Brain FM. I just found out about it when he sent this message in, and I just clicked the link. Are you familiar with it?
I'm not.
It's a website that plays music. And so I haven't looked at it thoroughly, but it looks like you can choose music that's going to prepare you for competition or to relax, brain stimulation, and so on and so forth. It's just interesting. I don't know. It's music. Hmm. It's obviously music that leverages a certain time. I would imagine, the three-quarter time or whatever, and the different beats, I guess they've found out, can stimulate different feelings in people and so on. But you don't know about it, so you really can't opine. So there you go.
Well, what I can say is I think what you're getting at, there is certainly a literature that suggests that music can be a way to self-regulate.
Yeah.
In terms of, slowing your heart rate or speeding up your heart rate or other parts of your physiology. So certainly, I'm not familiar with it, but it sounds like an interesting idea.
I always train harder when I have my headphones with me. When my headphones die, like I go, I forgot to charge them today, I just don't have it. Music motivates me. And I can play the same song over and over for the entire training session. Once I find the song that I want to play, I'll just let it play over and over again. And it really does make me train harder. There's no doubt in my mind about it. It's an ergogenic.
There is a whole science behind that. I'm probably not the expert to talk to you about that, but it is intriguing.
So how do my listeners find your book?
Sure. So it's published by the American Psychological Association. So it's available on their website on APA Books. It's also available on Amazon. Or I should say that the actual release date is August 14th, so early next week, but you can pre-order it now. You can also order it through our website, the organization that we're setting up to consult.
What is your website?
It's called mindfulsportperformance.org.
Okay. And what is the title of the book?
It's Mindful Sport Performance Enhancement, Mental Training for Athletes and Coaches.
There you go. You get it at Amazon, or you can go to their website and get it. Yeah, I love this stuff. And you know what? Everybody in the audience would agree that this would make a difference in their lives, but now will they do it? That's the question.
Yeah, and actually, I know that circles back to, I think, the first question you asked me. The first chapter of our book really talks about that. Making a commitment to mental training and to mindfulness in particular, we sort of talk about it as the anti-parachuting in. So often in sports psychology, people wait until there's something wrong, and then they say, okay, well, now we need to fix it. And we sort of talk about that as trying to learn how to swim while you're already drowning, and instead being able to recognize, wow, there is a science here, there is a practice here that can make a difference, and, being able to commit to mental training. It's a big step. And so a big part of our book is in trying to provide guidance not only in using MSPE, but in how to make this a part of your daily life. And even if you're not an athlete, even
I was
if
just going to say,
other,
yeah. Mindfulness can only improve your life in general. And
right.
That translates to your personal life, your work life, your sport life, and everything. We know this. We live in a nation of overstimulation. We're overstimulated by all the electronic devices and Twitter, and there's research out there showing that young, I guess we'd call them millennials, they have fragmented thought because they can't even think long enough because they're getting a text, and then Twitter goes off, and then Instagram goes off, and it's like they're reacting constantly all the time, and that's it, changing the way they think, their ability and so mindfulness is the antithesis of that. It's actually becoming more focused, more relaxed, less of not allowing things to intrude on your thought process. So it really probably is more needed today than ever before.
And I think what you're getting at too, I agree with that entirely. It's also a tougher sell than ever before. Even though we see all these wonderful benefits and people are fired up about it, because we're combating this culture of instant gratification, instant stimulation that you're talking about, getting people to buy into it and really do it, because it's work, and it's not just something that you pick up and do one day. It's a total way of being. And I'll just say real quick, I one of the things when we've worked with students that the schools that we've worked with have really liked is, we talk about it as performance enhancement, but sort of sneaking in there that it's really wellness skills. It's really not just something for the field. It's something for all of life and how they relate to academics, how they relate to social relationships. It kind of covers everything. And that's kind of daunting too, that we're not talking about just one little thing.
It's
a big deal
to
do this practice.
Sports are it. Like, people want to know, how can I become famous in my sport?
If you approach him and said, "Hey, we're going to help you have a, you're going to love life," would be like, "Nah, I just want to learn right. how to run faster. Can you get
so
me?"
So that's
to run
why
faster?
We talk. We joke. We sort of sneak that in, right? Yeah. We tell them about the performance enhancing benefits, but what we're really teaching them is something much bigger than that.
Yeah. Listen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Take care.
You too.
All right. So that's it for today, folks. We really covered some great stuff. I think that Evelyn Kosar has some valid and unique opinions. And there are more opinions out there, but the bottom line is there is more than one way to skin the type 2 diabetes cat, folks. And it's not just keto, and it's not just vegan, and it's not just paleo, and it's not just the next craze to come down. I don't even know what we're going to be eating soon. It's the next thing people are going to discover. Whatever works for you is what works for you. It may not work for anybody else. Don't try to push it on them. So that's that discussion. And then, of course, mindfulness. See, we did a bunch of really good shows with Ken O'Neill on the Trans-Evolutionary Fitness Radio podcast. He teaches you how to become mindful 4 different ways. You know, I mean, in motion, at rest, walking, which is different than the in motion one, because the in motion one implies like moving through certain types of activities and movements. Those were great, great shows that will get you into it quickly and easily. Or you can drop $1,700 and join Transcendental Meditation, because that's what it costs nowadays. 17 years ago, it was $250. Now it's like you have to. It's like $250 a month for like, I forget how many months. It's like $1,700 now. But either way, I really think it's important for all of us. And I'm saying this for myself probably more than anything else. To sequester 10 minutes out of your day to meditate and be mindful. If that 10 minutes out of your day could change your life, would you do it? Seriously. Think about that till I come back on the air next week. All right. Thanks. Bye.